Good evening. You are listening to Watch Now, brought to you by Astro. It is, of course, your friends at Skip Intro. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today is Bahi Yusuf, Julian Yap, and Ian McNally. And we're talking about this show.
I was asleep before. That's how we let it happen. When they slaughtered Congress, we didn't wake up. When they blamed terrorists and suspended the Constitution, we didn't wake up then either. Now I'm awake.
There's an eye in your house.
I want to keep on living for her.
Do not let them grind you down. You fight.
They should have never given us uniforms if they didn't want us to be an army.
Blessed be the fruit, under his eye, may the Lord open. Just all the usual greetings of Gilead, we would like to shower upon you, because of course we are talking about The Handmaid's Tale, which can be a bit of an emotionally trying show, but also one that it's just a great show. So we will be talking about that today. The Handmaid's Tale, of course, looks at the supposed fictional world of Gilead, in which it's kind of colonized or taken over some of America, and women's fertility is traded like a commodity, and women are just wombs, basically, in a world controlled by men.
Well, the handmaids are.
The handmaids are, yeah.
The
wives are controlled as well. All the women are controlled.
I mean, the womb thing.
The interesting thing is the structure of oppression is kind of built with the help of some women in a way, like, you know.
I'm really curious to find out about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it is interesting that the everyone in the show seems trapped, whether it's by their own decisions or by the decisions around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we follow the story of one particular handmaid, although, of course, it starts to branch out. Offred, because you are given the name of your commander, who is, in her case, his name is Fred, so she is Offred. And everyone else is Offglen, Offwarren. It's just the world's most boring list of white names, white guy names. But yeah, so we follow Offred trying to negotiate this world, and she's in the house of a particularly powerful commander and someone who was really in many ways the architect of the world in which she lives.
And I think as you go on in season two, maybe later bits of season one, you realize that it's not, maybe not as straightforward as it was his doing.
Yeah.
You know, he and had some maybe unlikely partners who maybe were not expecting things to turn out this way, which I'd like to find out more about. I think that is really interesting to see the fall of what and where it is. I'm assuming it's probably North America.
They're mostly somewhere close to Boston. Yeah. Like, I was trying to find out where the colonies are, where they send bad handmaids, and it's very hard to find out that information.
They make a reference to the fact that even going west to California is still Gilead. That happens later on in the show. I mean, when they talk about the parameters.
But they also, but going to Canada seems pretty easy. I mean, not easy.
It's a pretty big border.
I mean, you could. What I mean is, you could essentially walk there. It's not like going from Texas to Canada. Yeah. So I'm just really curious where. Yeah.
And the show, I think, so it runs on a couple of fronts, right? It's got the story of the handmaids in modern day, I suppose, or in the time in which the bulk of the show is set. It also tells the story through flashbacks of who these women used to be, who these men also used to be. And it is a grueling watch, but it's a beautiful one.
I think this second season really just doubles down on how grueling it can be to be in this world. The first one really wanted to show you how, it wanted to introduce you to the world and wanted to show you how the contrast between that and now, but also the similarities. But then the second one, we just see just how bleak it is and how terrible it is, not just for the handmaids, but for, they open it up. So they introduce different castes, I guess, different groups of women and how difficult it can be for them. And it's just, it's an ordeal, I think, to go through. It's enjoyable, but it's an ordeal.
I really like the way the first season is structured. When Offred is coming to Fred, it's not her first commander. So they managed to kind of introduce you to the world while sidestepping a lot of the stuff that would hamstring a show when they're trying to do that introduction. The flashbacks also really, really help fill in how they got to this place. Like, even when you're finding out someone's back history, there's always something else going on with regards to the laws getting more repressive, or like when June and Moira lose their jobs and banks are frozen. Like, it fills in these details really, really nicely. And the way that the present of the show is so oppressive, they don't get to do any of that character building in the in those times. So it really works nicely in that they leave lots of stuff that happens that is revealed about Moira in season two that you would have no clue about that in season one because there's no chance for them to talk about it.
Yeah, the personality gets built up over the flashbacks. And I think even then, the use of the flashbacks were very good. They're not annoying like say, Arrow does it. This is very, very well-paced. But also, the things they pick out on, like you said, Ian, this is character building is in the flashback as opposed to the current present time. Also building a little bit about what the first couple of days were of the fall of this, of essentially what we know of who the world is now.
Well, I mean, I think the bulk of what makes the flashbacks good and why they work generally is because they're shorter. And so they just give you little hints of, this is how beautiful life used to be. You know, parents used to watch TV with their kids before they were ripped away and given to other families. And so they dip you back in the world just long enough for you to go, oh, this was so beautiful. And then it goes straight back to her in her attic room on her bed, waiting to be told when to eat, what to do, waiting for the ceremony, which I'm not going to get into. But if you've seen the show, you know that the ceremony is just terrible.
Horrifying.
And I think I also like with the end of season one with Moira and Luke and that the whole other life of Canada, and it's basically refugees. And we have, it balances it really well. We get to see it's not a worldwide thing. This is purely just this very small part of America. And there's a part when we actually see that that divide and how the world is reacting to it. And I like that there's a thing to compare it to, I guess.
Yeah, because we do start to flesh out a little bit how people are sanctioning Gilead, for example, refusing to do trade, refusing to, you know, just basically trying to push this world further and further, either into the shadows or just to stop existing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you don't notice until that point that you have not received any news from the rest of the world, because you're basically living a handmaid's existence where there's no TV, there's no phone, there are no books, you are forbidden to read. And so there is actually no influx of information at all. And when you get it, you realize you're so hungry for it, right? Like when you realize what's actually going on.
It's also interesting that you forget that there's a rest of the world.
Yeah.
Watching the show, I keep forgetting that Gilead is I keep thinking, is it a state? Is it all of the US? But no, it's even smaller than that probably. And when we go to Canada and we see the refugees there essentially and how they're trying to either fight for their family members or trying to pressure the government into not dealing with them anymore, you realize, like you said, the UK is not working with them anymore, and Canada is now having strained relationships, and it's becoming really interesting. I want to see more of that wider world. Maybe not see it, but I want to see how it reacts to Gilead or how it interacts with Gilead.
You can catch up with Handmaid's Tale because the next season, season three, is going to be available only on demand as of the 6th of June. So if you have seen it, though, let us know what you think. Are you enjoying the show? Do you think that you're just watching a documentary? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at SkipIntroMY. And again, to watch Handmaid's Tale, connect your Astro PVR to Wi-Fi or download the Astro Go app. For more information, you can check out watchod.com. We'll be back to continue our discussion about, I guess, some of the pleasures of watching this show after this. You are listening to Watch Now on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro, specifically a little segment we call Watch Now that we do from time to time where we highlight the best of what you can watch on demand. And today we are focused on The Handmaid's Tale. So I did want to say that I put off watching season two for a long time because season one was so grueling, because season one is so emotionally tough that I just thought, okay, maybe I need a bit of a break. But when I went back into season two, all the same toughness was there. But I forgot that it's also, in many ways, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, quite an enjoyable show to watch. Like, it rewards the watching.
Yeah, it's when you said earlier about if you enjoyed the show, it's hard to enjoy. I don't know what the reaction is. You know what I mean? Like,
I get it.
There's a lot of,
it's fascinating.
Yeah, but you can't say like, oh, I'm really enjoying the show, because it's not an enjoyable show. There's not a lot of joy in the show. And it's...
Yes and no. So I'm going to say that from a story perspective, no, there
definitely
is no joy.
Yeah.
But performances are just stunning. Exchanges between characters are amazing. And also, I just think the show does a lot of interesting visuals. You know, the fact that handmaids are often shot from above because they are under his eye. The fact that she is often framed behind bars. The fact that there are just a lot of interesting shots that go a long way towards talking about, I guess, the isolation and, you know, managing to depict that darkness really,
loneliness
really well.
As well.
Exactly. Yeah. So none of this in and of itself, you know, reason to throw a party. But the show is just, it rewards viewing. I don't want to make it sound like there's nothing in it for anybody except destruction.
Yeah, and I only started watching it recently and I had heard all that about it being slightly depressing and stuff. But I was surprised by the little hints of defiance that pop up. Even the way that it pops to the credits at the end of every episode, there's usually a song that is almost black, bleakly comic with regards to what's going on. Or when Offred says something in her, there's a voiceover reaction to what's just happened. And those moments were like the peaks to get you back up the hill to get on the roller coaster of all the grief and damage.
I think just as a show, they balance the drama and the bleakness very well with hope. And it's never, it's always sort of, like you said, it's rewarding because you want to come back to it. You want to open up the world a bit more for yourself. They didn't do that so much with season one. And there's intrigue as well. They give you just enough of the present for you to, you know, maybe want to switch off your computer and go to the wilderness for a bit. But then they bring in stuff with the past and you get to see the dynamics of the government and how human lives are affected. And I think they balance it so well.
So with season two, I held out up until about episode 10 or 11. And then I had to stop and read the recaps because I was not able to enjoy it anymore because I was too tense. So it was interrupting my ability to actually watch the show because I was like, what's going to happen?
I found season two, and this is where I think we've been going back and forth a bit. I find season two a little more, so what I'm looking for, Offred's a little more defiant. She's not as, in season one, she's a bit more victim-y, and as expected, right? It's a new environment for her. It's a new environment for us. But in season two, she doesn't win a lot of times, but she fights back.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like, hopefully, season three to see her take charge a bit more.
Because they nicely contrast her acts of defiance with acts of other handmaids and how they go a little bit more overt. I mean, there's the scene with the Soning in season one, but like Emily and Janine get sent off to the colonies for what they've done. And Offred is always on this razor wire balancing act of doing too much or too little. Every time she says Serena to Yvonne Strahovski, I'm like almost ready to go hide behind the couch because you're never sure
how
what reaction
yeah.
is going to be. It could be like a slap in the face or it could be
A hug,
which is more terrifying from Yvonne Strahovski.
You don't know what
show.
It means.
But that is exactly that balance is only achieved because those two are so good. Yeah. I mean, Elizabeth Moss was already stupendous from season one. I think, you know, everybody kind of, she's been so good for so long. I don't know why people are still ever surprised that she's good.
I think to talk about Elizabeth Moss a little bit, her decision making in the types of shows she does is also very good.
Yeah.
She doesn't do the light, fluffy stuff. She goes from The West Wing, which is heavy politics, to Mad Men, which is 1960s
Peggy
sexual
Olsen
repression.
Forever.
You know, yeah, the coming of age of women in American society to this.
And Top of the Lake.
And Top of the Lake.
Yeah, so
yes,
she's been
exactly.
doing kind of these weird, very dark,
very
characters.
Strong characters. Yeah,
and so much of this show is just reactions playing across her face as she's like, you can see the feelings bubbling within as she's trying to figure out what to do. Like, it's just they just plonk the camera down in front of her for long periods of time, and it's brilliant,
beautiful. Yeah,
but Julian and I have also been having conversations about, well, Serena, because I'm scared to say her name, just Mrs. Waterford, because she's just stupendous. I mean, Yvonne Strahovski is just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand why she hasn't gotten as much recognition for this role as Elizabeth Moss has, especially in the second season. So I was hoping that she would have for this one, but she hasn't really. But just how little she gives, but how much she gives in every scene when they're interacting with each other, especially. Her face just gives nothing away, but then when she has to, she gives her entire, she acts with her whole body. Mm. I think it's so compelling to watch her.
I'm actually more excited to see what happens with Serena in season three, because fundamentally, not because I've lost interest in June / Offred, you know, I will always want to know what happens to June Osborne, but because season two started to flesh out a little bit more about the Serena Joy, Serena Waterford story, and how it is that she came to be this person and how she might be feeling about being this person, because she doesn't get to talk to anybody about it. That's the thing about Gilead. Nobody talks about anything. Nobody talks about their thoughts or feelings because you don't know who's an I, you don't know who's a spy. So the fact that we can glean some of Serena's unhappiness based on very little is just credit to her acting.
Yeah. And I think you're also seeing cracks in her character, in every character. You're seeing cracks in the world, in Gilead as a society. So to see where that it's going to go and where each of them are going to, what each of their motivations are and how they're going to move forward, I think it's going to be so cool for the watch for season three.
Yeah, I think season three will be interesting because like Julian says, there's a cracks are beginning to show. And I really want to know more about Serena's backstory, because there were a couple of flashbacks that were shown in season two that implies that she may have had a bit of an active role in the situation.
I think she had a very active role in the situation. But now she's realizing that maybe she should have done a little bit more research on her book before they adopted it as a kind of a plan for society, because the cracks are beginning to show. I like that she's kind of starting her journey, whereas June is well on the way and to what she wants to get out of this world.
The realization, I think, of betrayal on the rise to power, because that's a theme that's come up again and again in terms of how Gilead has been shaped. Like, you see moments of Gilead's architects and creators visibly regretting it, but now they can't leave because that's just the way it is. Or, you know, you don't just get to, it's basically heresy and, you know, you're a traitor. Just the other thing that I liked about the show was also, I think we mentioned this, it's actually the smaller details of how it is that people don't leave. Because it is very easy to watch a show like this and go, I would have known. I would have bounced 6 months before they closed the borders. I would have known. And they show how the bank accounts were shut down slowly. They show how the passports were frozen slowly. They show how they slowly begin to suss out your fertility and whether or not you should stay, whether or not they have to keep you. And that stuff, I think, goes a long way towards making it feel realer.
Hmm. There's a terrifying moment when Emily's at the airport and the law has changed overnight and your marriage is no longer valid. And that's just horrifying.
They touched on this slightly in the first one when June was just ordered out of her office.
Yeah.
And then we visit an office, an abandoned office.
Oof,
and
yes.
And just the remnants of people's lives. And very clearly, they were people's lives. And then you get to see how they've just been left there.
So are we psyched about season three? Is psyched the wrong word? Are we looking forward to it, you know?
Mentally preparing.
Yeah.
I'm mentally preparing myself for season three. I like it. I really am. I really can't wait to watch season three, but I just have to watch Frasier now and just sort of get my brain in a happy zone to then get into Gilead again.
Yeah, Handmaid's Tale makes you want to either burn a car or just curl up in a ball. It's very hard to decide.
It's hard to decide, yeah.
So, season three?
Oh, I'm well up for it. I really want to see, like, as I said, the Offred's defiance has been stepping up over time, and I'm really interested to see how that goes in this dysfunctional household and this dysfunctional world. Just the number of, like, relations that are going on and lines that can be crossed at any moment, it's building more and more on top of it, not just with her but with people against her. So I'm really interested to see where that goes, and I don't know where the show ends at some point. Like, it will end at some point, but where, what does that mean? Like, it's going to be very scary when that comes around.
I think the bubble is just about to burst. We are just maybe one or maybe half a season away for it to burst, and I'm very excited to see that happen. I don't know how I have to prepare for that.
Maybe take a spa day.
Yeah, I don't think it's like I'm going to come back to this and I'm going to watch one episode every week. I think that's just a downer on your whole week, to be honest.
Watch lots of cartoons in between.
I'm going to watch it, I think, because, like I said, I forgot how much I liked it. I mean, I always tell people how much I like it. I always talk about how I enjoy it, and then I avoid season two like the plague.
Yeah.
So I think this time I'm going to try, unlike Julian, to try and attack it head on and see how that goes, because this binging thing is also not working out for me. But you can catch up in time for the launch of season three, because it's going to be available on demand, because Handmaid's Tale will be available only on demand as of the 6th of June. You can connect your Astro PVR to Wi-Fi. You can download the Astro Go app. For more information, you can go to watchod.com. I really hope we haven't put you off with this entire show, because it is I think it is one of the great TV shows of our age. It's just a tough one, so consider yourself warned. You have been listening today to Watch Now, BFM 89.9.